Hi, I'm Mackenzie Atwood. Thank you guys so much for joining in and listening to the Steven Universe podcast. So we've been exploring the people and places of Steven Universe, digging a little bit deeper into their backstories and their origins and their development, and today we're going to be focusing on Earth Gems. And by that I mean there are three gems who are very different from each other, but they're connected by the events of the gem war on Earth that happened thousands of years ago. So that means Rose Quartz, the leader of the rebellion, Bismuth, the rebel's weaponsmith, and Jasper, who's a gem that was made on Earth and fought for a homeworld. We're going to learn about what inspired their creation and learn more about their roles in gem society and culture. Steven Universe director Joe Johnston and supervising director Kat Morris are also going to be here to offer some insight, and so will creator Rebecca Sugar and former EP Ian JQ. So that's where we're going to be starting out today, with Rebecca and Ian. Thank you guys so much for coming on and talking to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no problem.
So let's talk about Jasper first. What kind of impact did you want her character to have on the audience, like her arc?
Oh, her whole arc? I think...
Yeah, like through like being corrupted from all
I think like a lot of the characters, I really wanted Jasper to appear to be a lot more one-dimensional than she actually is.
Right.
I mean, all of her behavior has a root. And, you know, I wanted you to meet her and get a lot of the foliage. Does this make sense?
Above the root?
Yes.
Is that what?
Yeah, get the leaves, you know? There's a lot. As soon as you meet her, I mean, the reason she's there, like, she didn't have to be the one to do this, but she's got a stake in Rose Quartz and Earth.
Right, she has a score to settle, basically.
Yeah.
And actually, early on, you don't actually know that.
Yeah.
But you just know... There's something there behind her intentions.
She's talking about it, yeah. But she's talking about it in a very... It's very personal for her. She's not going to tell, you know, Peridot, definitely not Lapis, like, why this is such a personal thing for her, but you're going to sort of slowly...
Yeah, there's a lot of great moments.
Find out.
Especially, in Jailbreak and The Return, where if you go back and watch those, knowing what you know about Jasper, you see, like... a lot of clues as to why she's there and, you know, how she feels about the gems and Rose Quartz especially.
Yeah, because the first time you see, if you're just seeing her come through, like, in The Return, it's just like, oh, well, she's angry, you know, like, but knowing, like you said, what you know about Rose, it definitely changes things. When you said that in a past podcast that Jasper was a decorated gem from humble origins... How do you think that affects her characterization, like, in her personality?
That's everything. Like, that's the thing you don't know when she shows up that's coloring all of her actions.
Yeah.
Because she is from Earth. And I think it's interesting because it's something that... Well, she's very different than Amethyst. Like, Amethyst has problems knowing that she's from Earth because her whole experience has been, you know, she's gotten so many subtle clues that the kindergarten is this awful... place, you know, she's from this awful place that was this huge mistake because it was them invading Earth. Like, she's put it together that there's something wrong with that. But Jasper feels differently because she's from, like Amethyst Kindergarten was a very successful kindergarten. Jasper's from a very unsuccessful kindergarten. She's not only is she from Earth, which is a complete failure of a planet as far as homeworld is concerned, she's from, like, the worst kindergarten on Earth. So she came out... with a lot to prove, which is what defines
Jasper had to live and work in a system that knew all those things about her, that she's from this failed colony, from this place that was this, like, huge quagmire for, you know, gem kind.
And everyone else, I think, you know, people, the gems that came from the beta kindergarten were so flawed that no matter how she's... perfect, like, all evidence points to her being perfect, but she's never going to shake the idea that there's got to be something wrong.
And that's kind of where, like, her sort of pride comes from, why she won't accept help from anybody.
She feels like she had to work harder than everyone, you know, and prove herself with this nagging notion in her mind that she's from this place is so disgraceful. And that Rose, I mean, Rose is like, when people... think of Earth on Homeworld, they think of Rose Quartz and this rebellion, and it's like a thing she can never escape.
She can't shake this thing.
This association with this really negative association with Earth, and no matter how, even though she's like the best thing to come out of Earth, she still came out of Earth.
Something I always liked about Jasper on the show was how she rarely put her emotions and her true feelings on her sleeve. They kind of sneak out, like, in these small moments where she says, like, a line that suddenly you're like, oh, that, you know, you're finally seeing to the core of this character. But usually when she's talking, it's like boasting, bravado, a lot of pride, a lot of, like, her just being, you know, in her element of being, like, this, like, decorated, cool, you know, warrior gem.
Right. It's the opposite of how she actually feels. Like, yeah. There's a reason she has to
put that
so front and center. It's because she, deep down, she feels like she doesn't really deserve that to be that.
Right.
And that's why she can't escape this place. She's just letting it destroy her. Like, when she's there. And she's destroying herself, but I think, because she's so worried, like, at the core, that the core of herself is wrong, she keeps diving into it and just doing horrible things, because she thinks she's horrible. She thinks she's horrible.
It's really tragic. Mm-hmm. Actually.
Yeah, yeah. It's
well, it's sort of one of those stories.
I love Jasper.
Yeah, I know. Me too. I mean, Jasper. It's one of those stories, sort of about how you know, these systems that are set up kind of fail people, you know, from different origins. You know, the gem system was set up for, you know, successful gems from successful colonies who would be having a lot of success, taking over the universe, you know. But when it comes to someone who is a little bit out of the mold, it harms everyone. And Jasper falls into that, even though, you know, she should be, on the outside, it looks like she should be, like, you know, a model gem. Mm-hmm.
Exemplary.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the other side of the coin, there's, let's talk about bismuth.
Oh, yeah.
So when did you guys start talking or thinking about bismuth as a character? Because, like, you know, there's people were talking about bismuth since the first time we saw inside Lion's Mane and we saw the bubble gem. That was, like, season one, though. So, like,
I think, did Joe draw that in?
Joe drew that in.
With that, I think
he didn't have a specific plan, but we knew.
I mean, we knew we wanted to.
We were going
to
do something with that, and I remember we had talks about like a quote unquote lost crystal gem, like going way far back.
Mm. And there were early versions of bismuth. I feel like these are pitches that we never end up doing that we always have early on, but like that. Bismuth would be kind of perpetually unconscious.
Oh, yeah.
Like, very different. I mean, it was a completely different idea that the gem that Rose had saved would be damaged in some sort of different and exceptional way. And
yeah, those are ideas that we ended up not doing because they sort of would end up limiting those characters.
It was limiting it was sort of it was more lapis.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I mean, we knew that this would be a lost crystal gem. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing we knew for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there are different iterations of that. I mean, I'm talking about really early on, because we figured out who she was pretty soon after.
Yeah, once we had like
during season one, I think we already had our plans for.
Because once we had the more solid ideas, one of the main ideas was actually like almost like a logical one. Steven Sugar, Rebecca's brother, would always litter the world with all these with all these weapons, all these huge gem weapons.
Oh,
and
yeah, and we knew we needed a,
and then
a
we were like,
who had made them.
We were like, who made all the weapons? And then we figured out, oh, what is their team missing? They don't have, like, a weaponsmith.
Yeah,
they don't have a builder. Like, someone had to build all the stuff that eventually belonged to all the gems, the crystal gems on Earth, and who was that? And so very early on, we realized the hole that bismuth would be filling. And, yeah, it was very easy to figure out her character when we had that.
Yeah. Right, sort of tied it together.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, her place on the team, for sure. And then her character started to make a lot of sense after, like, you know, being sort of like this gooey center of the team.
I like that.
Yeah.
What was the decision, the season three decision made for her? Like, why did you decide to unbubble her then rather than earlier on?
Well, that had to do with we were trying to pace out everyone's feelings about rose quartz.
Yeah.
And this is the turning point. Where
this was a huge turning point.
Where you find out that rose quartz is a really awful person.
Yeah, and I always loved the trope of someone who, like a villain who is sort of bad to their own subordinate, you know, and then this is the episode where you find out that Rose kind of was that.
Rose is...
That is the trope that I like, but in that episode, it's very clear she did
this
wrong.
This is someone who, oh my gosh, I mean, Bismuth adored...
Yeah.
Rose.
Yeah.
Loved Rose.
And she was willing to do like anything for Rose.
And she did, for Rose specifically.
She
did the thing that Rose definitely wanted the most.
Yeah.
And then she was upset about it. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like, Bismuth doesn't get, not only does Bismuth not get to understand why, none of her friends do either.
Exactly.
And the whole thing is just swept under the rug.
I mean, this is really. Yeah.
It's one thing to be like, oh, Jasper hates Rose Quartz. We fought in the war.
Mm-hmm.
This is someone who idolized Rose.
Yeah.
And then was totally, can I say screwed over?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then sort of...
You know what the worst thing about it is? She still talks about how great she is.
I know, and she still talks about how great she is. Rose, yeah. It's really tragic.
She still made that difference in Bismuth's life. Mm-hmm. Oh, my favorite thing about drawing Bismuth is... Like, I did a bunch of drawings for the scene where she's talking... Where she's talking to Steven.
Rose Quartz changed my life.
Yeah. And I love to give her these very specific eyelashes. She has these little... sort of triangular eyelashes when she's kind of waxing poetic. Then.
Yeah. And then from a writing standpoint, season 3 was the best time. And this is something that if anyone's sort of interested in writing their own stories or their own books, it's like because Bismuth was a lost crystal gem and represented a break. Her story represents a break from what we know about the crystal gems. You kind of have to wait until all of those things are very firmly established to break them. So say if we had brought out Bismuth in, say, like episode 4 or something, I mean, none of her story would matter because you wouldn't understand what a crystal gem really is or what Rose meant to everybody.
Yeah, you need a lot of pieces.
Yeah, you need a lot of the puzzle pieces before you can add something as monumental as, you know, the lost member of a group.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You really need that picture of Rose too before it can shift.
Yeah, everything really had to be set up because, you know, I remember this was like it was one of the first like really big we had dabbled in being like, well, maybe Rose Quartz wasn't perfect.
Oh, but, I knew we knew all about Rose.
I mean, we had done it in like several stories, but then this.
We'd actually shown.
Yeah, but then this in the Bismuth episode was the one where it was like, oh, you know, you can see in this story, like point blank, Rose was wrong. You know,
mm-hmm.
And you never because you think even when Jasper doesn't like Rose, you're like, oh, but they're,
yeah,
you know, this is righteous fight and it makes sense. And it's like this does not make sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, that the other thing that so this is a big turning point for Steven because everyone is still really loyal to Rose. You know, he's been getting this portrait of her from his family, but he's the one with his first hand experience with Bismuth. And he carries his confusion and his guilt about it, it never goes away.
Yeah, it doesn't go away at all.
I mean, in Mindful, Steven, you know, has been just building up really all this guilt. And, you know, when he sees Bismuth, when he sees Jasper, when he sees Eyeball, it's not so much that he's afraid they're going to attack him. He's afraid that he attacked them. I mean, Steven wants to help everyone so much. And he sees these three failures.
Yeah.
And, like, it just never goes away for him. He just is going to carry it with him.
And Bismuth
forever.
Is sort of like the kickoff of that. And I think he always had a vague idea that he needed to carry sort of like these struggles and deal with this baggage from that was left over from before him. But I think like Bismuth was a real solidifier of, oh, there was some real stuff going down. Mm-hmm. And
right, there
now
was something.
I'm inheriting some of that.
Yeah, there's something wrong with the whole. There's something wrong with the crystal gems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's new. That's new.
It was really new for Steven.
As a group.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why did they not get to know that this happened?
Yeah,
it's crazy. Rose like has a character arc, even though like she never actually is in the show, and that's really crazy to watch with all these reveals. Mm-hmm. It feels like,
yeah,
it just happened in the past.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And you're just sort of unraveling that whole thing, so that we get these conflicting ideas about who Rose is and what she's done. How do you pace these things, like in terms of one after the other, from like you said, like Eyeball and Bismuth and Jasper and all of that leading up to Eyeball saying that she saw Rose shatter pink? How did you decide to pace all of that?
We're kind of building like a tower. We're building. Yeah. It's like one step at a time. Like you need.
Mm-hmm,
we try to figure out when we've got to give a piece of information, so that by the time we want to do a certain story, you have every ingredient you need to understand that story, and to have that story change your understanding so that the next story will make sense. I make a lot of charts.
Yeah. We kind of we had a really in-depth backstory and basically like a timeline of Rose and everything that happened sort of from the beginning to the end of the story. And basically, we would portion out that story into pieces that could be delivered to Steven. So every piece would have to build on a previous piece that you knew about her. So at the beginning, there was just like these general ideas of who she was and what she stood for and stuff. And then as the story kept going, you know, we needed to reveal these things about her. And what's fun about it is that Rose's story doesn't actually get revealed to the viewer in order. It gets kind of revealed to the viewer sort of like in terms of steps, like what's the next step you need to know to understand something deeper about her.
Mm-hmm. And it's not chronological. Yeah.
I think the most crucial thing too is that it's from Steven's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're getting is what certain people want Steven to think about his mother.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then the points at which that is fracturing because other people want to expose him to what was really going on.
I mean,
on.
At the end of the day, it all goes back to that experience of being a kid and suddenly slowly realizing that there's a world bigger than you, outside of you. And it's slowly getting revealed to you by the people that you know and trust, and maybe some people you even shouldn't trust. And Rose's story getting revealed to us this way, you know, it wouldn't work through anybody else's eyes. Like, you know, it needs to be sort of how, you know, everybody has the experience of thinking they know their parents, and then suddenly you learn, like, something about your parents that, like, you know, oh, they were like that, or they
And, there's an added difficulty for Steven, which is that half these people think he is his mother.
Exactly.
So they're just talking directly to her.
I mean, that's like, there's magical complications.
Yeah.
Antics. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I like about it is that everyone is being sincere.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's trying to trick Steven into thinking something. Greg adores, you know, Rose.
But, I mean, he adores the Rose he knew.
Yeah, the Rose he knew, which was a very specific side of her.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew her in different ways at different times, met her for different reasons, and she meant something different to each of them. And that's really fun.
Though I will say, one of the things that we established about Rose really early on that I really love that bore a lot of fruit was just Pearl saying Rose had a lot of secrets. Which is just the truth.
That's true.
She had to just keep them.
I like
everyone
moment.
She was trying to protect.
Yeah.
One thing I think that I like that slowly unfolds is I feel like I want people to realize that all of Steven's compassion is coming from Greg.
Yes. That's a good way.
You know.
That's a good way of putting it.
That's you know, and Rose knows that too. She's interested in that because she does not quite understand it. And that is one of my favorite things
about drawing her and writing her.
That is pretty foreign to her. That's pretty foreign to Gems.
And like We Need to Talk, you really see that illustrated.
Yeah, she really thinks she's like able to be a convincing human being. But she's just sort of playing at it. It's very surface, and
yeah,
she needs Greg to. She's like fascinated by Greg because it comes really, really naturally to him. And now Stephen is, you know, this compassionate warrior. But the warrior part is Rose. The compassionate part is Greg.
Yeah.
Wow.
Is that a spoiler?
No, it's not a spoiler.
No, I don't think so.
All the evidence is out there.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me again.
Absolutely.
So as our exploration of Earth Gems continues, I think we need to go a little bit deeper on both Jasper and Bismuth. So how about we start out with Jasper? I've got Steven Universe director Joe Johnston and supervising director Kat Morris here to do just that. All right, I am here with Kat Morris and Joe Johnston. Today we're talking about Jasper. Welcome, guys. Thank you so much for coming and talking to me.
Hello.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, for sure. So, first off with Jasper, I kind of was wondering, you know, people compare animating kind of to acting because you have to decide what the character's expressions are in a way similar to an actor. So I was thinking, like, what kind of stuff you guys do to sort of get in that mindset when it comes to writing dialogue or drawing Jasper?
Jasper was sort of a new addition to the cast in a way that we hadn't had a sort of traditional villain before. And she's not a traditional villain, but her acting does occupy that sort of realm. At least at the beginning when she shows up, she's very menacing and
kind of corny.
Very corny too. And that was all Paul Vallejo.
Yeah, Paul has a really deep love for shonen manga and anime, and I think that came across a lot in the villains he likes to write. Kind of JoJo-inspired bad guys.
Just, like, tried-and-true villains, yeah. I really like that. It's really neat because, like, it's also the subversion because there's obviously more to her than just meets the eye. But she's the first character that we saw who, like, at the end of her current arc, she's not redeemed. She doesn't, you know, become a good guy. So what was it like having that? Because that's pretty different from other gems that we've met, like Peridot or Lapis.
I think it was a little refreshing to see a character that could not be, not seduced, not that's the wrong word, but
maybe helped,
like turned helped, to their side.
Yeah, helped by Steven.
Yeah, I think ultimately Jasper wants to hold on to that anger where I think Lapis and Peridot wanted more. You know, in order to change, you need to want to change, and Jasper didn't want that, and we couldn't force that on her.
Yeah, she wants to be who she is already. She's not looking to be something else because she already thinks that what she is and who she is
perfect.
Perfect, yeah.
And she's been told that from the day she emerged.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy too because that's the first time Steven is really, I mean, you know, since it's from his POV, like when we experience something for the first time, like a villain who doesn't want to change, that's the first time Steven's seeing something like that as well. So do you think that was, like, impactful for him?
Yeah. I mean, I think, unfortunately, it was also under some some pink diamond reveal for Steven. So I think he had a lot of things going on in that moment.
And it's not, like, the first character that he hasn't been able to sway. Lars has been very, very stubborn through the whole show. I would say even now he's still stubborn.
But Lars hasn't explicitly tried to kill him.
No.
That's not, a minor difference.
Not yet. No,
sorry,
I'm
spoiler.
I'm joking.
What?
No.
That's a joke.
I can't even imagine. despite the negative traits that Jasper has, and like, there's still a lot beneath the surface, and I think that's what makes her so popular within the fandom. Like, if you compare like the amount of love she gets versus like the amount of appearances she's made, like people love Jasper. So how do you, like, balance that and make sure that you stay true to the character but also make her, you know, sympathetic?
I think just by treating her as a person. You know, I don't think there is anybody in the world who is 100% evil all the time. I wouldn't even say the word evil for Jasper. She just has a different set of beliefs and values. Joe, help me out here.
Yeah. Bullying, being a bully, that comes from a place. It doesn't come from nothing. It comes from whatever situation outside of bullying is affecting their lives. And Jasper has a lot of pent up feelings from the past that, you know, come out in the way she acts.
Yeah. She's heartbroken by the loss of her diamond, for one. That's a really big one, mm-hmm. especially if you identify so strongly with being a servant to that diamond. And then later on with Lapis.
It just makes things really complicated. Yeah, I get where you're going with that. For Joe, you worked on Jailbreak. You mm-hmm. boarded it, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it like working on that, like drawing Jasper and writing her for the first time when she was such a big, like, physical threat in a way that, I mean, it was different from obviously the stuff we'd seen before.
Yes. Yes. So we were ready to do that. Just from like we'd spent the whole show without like a serious main antagonist. And so I think everyone was sort of ready to jump into that pool. That one, those two episodes, The Return and Jailbreak, if I'm remembering correctly, we boarded those out of order. I think we started Jailbreak before The Return.
I don't remember. I feel like Jasper was already written a little bit before you guys jumped in.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Rebecca had a pretty clear idea mm-hmm. for her, but mm-hmm. Paul didn't do her intro until after we had already sort of started on Jailbreak. And so, yeah, we were all sort of grabbing from the same pool. Sometimes when we're doing new characters, Rebecca will write up a sort of one sheet and a bunch of drawings that will really sort of define the character. And she's done that for most of the new characters whenever we've introduced someone. So that's the way it was for Jasper. And there was a lot of planning and talking before about how it was all going to work and how we'd get into why she was fusing with Lapis and how that whole ending was going to work. So the plan was sort of laid and we just kind of ran with it.
Yeah, I totally get you. Kat, like when you did Alone at Sea, like that was a totally different side of that coin. Cause you know, like, I mean, it was still a physical threat like you saw in Jailbreak, but also it was just such like an emotional threat to Lapis and, you know, the place that she was in. How did you go about tackling that?
Well, talked to Rebecca and Hillary a lot. mm-hmm. It was, I mean, Jasper's had a lot of time to think by this point in the story. She's been in the ocean.
<Time out.
laughs> I think, I'd say she probably has never fused before this moment.
No.
So she didn't know what it was. And now mm-hmm. that she does know that when you fuse, you become more powerful, she became addicted to it.
In Jailbreak, it was just, we're playing with a new evil, quote unquote, character. And that's all she had to be. We didn't really need to go into anything deeper, partially because there just wasn't any room mm-hmm. to go any deeper than that. And then by the time we get to Alone at Sea, then we're getting into the why and the
yeah,
how.
Yeah, I mean, plus she hadn't really experienced mm-hmm. what she experienced with mm-hmm. Lapis yet. So she's in a different place.
Yeah. Did you do boarding for Alone at Sea? Is that your...
Yes. Yeah, I did. I did X1 and 3. So all the boat stuff is me.
Cool.
But Rebecca also did a pass on it. We had a lot of versions of this story. At first, I think it was called Boat Murderer. It was sort of like the ship kept like breaking down in different ways, and they didn't know why. And at the end, you found out it was Jasper, and we just sort of like shifted it until it became what it was.
But you don't normally like have a whole chunk of the episode to board, do you?
No. I don't. I did the first episode, which was Laserlight at the time, although we switched the air order. But I was always storyboard supervisor and then eventually became supervising director. Mm-hmm. This was just a special case, sort of like a pinch hitter type, too. So we needed another hand on this episode, and that was me.
Yeah. Was it tough, like, mechanically getting the Jasper look down? Like, did you have to have any collaboration to figure out how to draw her?
I draw on every episode, so I wasn't totally out of water on that. I'm not great with drawing Jasper, but that's just because what I gravitate toward as an artist. And to be fair, yeah, I haven't drawn her as much. But also, I mean, for example, I was the one directing the Amethyst arc, like Earthlings and mm-hmm. Beta and those episodes. So I'd been working with Jasper already. It wasn't hard, but it was hard doing the work because I had so many other responsibilities at the time.
Yeah, it's not like you hadn't seen her before or anything, but I understand, yeah. That season three arc with Amethyst and everything really started kicking off like the mystery of Rose Quartz and like Pink Diamond and everything. But it also sort of helped Amethyst and Steven's development, and like they, you know, obviously they had their fusion. So how do you balance those things, like as a director, you think?
Oh, well, I mean, the story was already written, so it was just a matter of making sure all the characters were acting true to who they were. It was, I think, more than Jasper, it was really about Amethyst. I think all the other characters, especially after the Sardonyx arc, had their moments to sort of change and grow, but Amethyst was in the same place, and so figuring out what Amethyst's deal was. And Jasper was a really good character to play off of that, because Jasper is who Amethyst was, quote-unquote, supposed to be. She's supposed to be big, she's supposed to be strong, she's supposed to be a soldier. Amethyst is none of those things. And she thought she was fine with it, and then she gets totally annihilated when Jasper shows up just walking out of the ocean. I think it kind of forced her to reflect on what she thought she liked about herself, and maybe realizing she didn't like herself very much at all. And Steven helps her accept who she is. Well, accept her. Well.
Okay, awesome. Thank you guys so much for coming on and talking to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Kat and Joe have agreed to stay and talk about Bismuth too, so we'll get to that coming right up.
I am back with Kat Morris and Joe Johnson. Thanks again, guys, for coming on and talking to me.
Thanks for still having us.
We are still here.
Yeah, for sure. Now we're going to be talking about Bismuth.
Bismuth.
So, yeah, there's a lot there. Bismuth is such a... I love her from the first moment I saw her character. It's great.
Same.
Yeah, it's just like, ugh. But, like, what were your thoughts leading up to, like, the Bismuth episode and then while you were making it as well?
Well, first, Joe incepted Bismuth.
Yes, Bismuth.
Oh,
Bismuth. So when we did, when Jeff Liu and I did Lion 3, we got the fun idea to put a bunch of stuff in the main. And there were a couple things that Rebecca wanted, such as the T-shirt and was the sword in there? No, it was the flag. The flag was waving. So just little bits of memorabilia from Rose's past. And then I just stuck in this bubble with this gem in it, this little piece of bismuth. And that was it. There was no plan for really what she would become.
This is like a Joe thing. He likes to put things in, and he's like, I don't know, maybe it'll be something later.
It'll be, you know, save it for later.
He puts down breadcrumbs for us whenever we get lost. We'd be like, what's the thing Joe put in?
That's so funny.
One of the ideas that I had for it was instead of an actual gem, it was a gem device, maybe. My idea for it would have been like it would have been a portable warp for Steven to use wherever he was, something like that. But there really was no. Steven's already OP. He's got so much OP.
He got a lion. The lion art.
Yeah,
that's true. The lion gets tired.
Yeah. So there wasn't a plan. So like, and that was sort of something that Rebecca wanted in the show from the beginning, was this pieces of lore that are just sort of thrown about the living room. That was the sort of feeling that, you know, she wanted, that like all of this history was just laying about for you to just pick up and discover. So it was that same sort of sentiment when we put Bismuth there. And then Rebecca had to invent who Bismuth actually is, and that's what she did.
That's so crazy. I remember seeing, because as soon as that episode came out, you know, there are people talking about it, and every time Steven goes into Lion's Mane, every time he did before Bismuth, everyone was always like, there's that gem again. Who is that? There were so many theories. And you got...
It might not have even been a gem if Joe had his way.
Yeah, like, it's just... I love that so much. What's your favorite, like, part of her character?
I love how much she loves the crystal gems. I think that pride and that love that she has for her people is really strong and really beautiful to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we were talking about this a little earlier, was Bismuth and Jasper are sort of two sides to a coin, in that they're both extremely patriotic for whatever side they're on. So Bismuth is just the most gung-ho patriotic Crystal Gem, and Jasper is all about homeworld. So it's fun to play with these two characters in that sense, and how they're so, you know, on their side and just want to see their side of things.
I can imagine a shouting match between the two of them, and it would not end well.
It'd be very loud.
Yeah. When you have such like a big character join the cast, is it tough for you guys to get a feel for how to draw and write her, especially since this is something that like became a thing after the show's already airing?
Yeah, there's tough bits in both of that. It takes sort of everyone having a pass at her to sort of find the character. And luckily that was a 22-minute episode, and so we had 4 board artists.
I mean, 5 if you count Rebecca.
5, 6 counting me too. Who all sort of
working on that.
All the little things. But yeah. But we all had sort of a pass at her voice. Mm-hmm. And so it took a collective effort to get her to where she is. Lamar had a big part of getting sort of her humor in there.
Mm. That part where she's like, oh, don't make me cry.
Yeah.
So cute.
Yeah.
I love Bismuth.
Yeah.
I love her. She really does care so much is what's just so exciting about her.
Mm-hmm.
The thing you said about the 22-minute, how does that, like, because this is the first time, you know, it was a landmark. I think it was the 100th episode too, right? Like,
yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, the 100th episode. 100th episode yeah, for us, yeah. If you're not counting the shorts.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Well, if you're counting the shorts, yeah.
So, like, that's a big milestone, you know? Like, and the fact that it's 22 minutes, what does that change for you guys between, like, an 11-minute episode or 22?
Just how much post
it's twice as hard.
You've got more board artists to wrangle. You've got more picture to lock and apply sound effects to and do music for.
Yeah, it was just a different flow, just because normally there's just not enough time for everything that we want to do sometimes in an episode. And then suddenly you have too much time all of a sudden, and then you have to figure out how to maybe pad things out a little bit more. It's especially if you've been working in an 11-minute format for so long, suddenly switching to a 22, you feel like you have all the space in the world.
It's nice to be able to let things breathe, though.
Yeah.
There are times where you have moments that need to be quiet, but we kind of have to truncate them a little bit to fit the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bismuth has a little bit more of that brooding, slow burn quality at times.
Yeah, a lot more. And mm-hmm. and it you can see it in how we were able to do the titles and how spaced out they are.
And the eye catch.
And the eye catches, that's right.
Yeah, the little bumper, mini bumper thingies. Whose idea was that?
Probably Joe's.
Yeah?
I think so. I think that came up kind of during the pitch at some point.
Someone put it in and we're like, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, I think, I don't remember. I'm not gonna take credit on that. No, I drew them.
He'll take credit for that.
I'll definitely take credit for that.
I love it. I love them. When you're talking about the pitch, like when you do a 22-minute episode like that, do you guys like just say, "Hey, can we do a 22-minute episode?" And then you just run with it, or do they?
The network asked us to. They wanted us to do 3 half hours in 1 year.
Yeah.
But I think we ended up only doing 2.
Yeah, yeah. This one lined up with the 100th episode, so it was an excuse to do something big. But yeah, they did want to at least 2 half hours in that run.
The other one being Gem Harvest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, then we have the story still written as 11 minutes, so we had one team start, and then the next week the next team started. So there was like a week gap between them, and they were sort of seeing what the other was doing and adjusting. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as the directors, we were also helping adjust along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What was the when you hear like the voice work done? I really love Bismuth's voice. I love it so much. What's it like having like a special guest voice actor like that?
So like special shout out and thank you to Uzo Aduba.
Mm-hmm.
She's fantastic and amazing. Every single read that we got from her was just like, oh, that's perfect. Oh, that's also, how do we choose which read to use in here? It's a joy getting to work with her on this character.
Yeah, guest stars are also kind of sad because they're usually phone patches, so you don't get to meet them.
No.
You're just telling them how much you love them into an empty room.
Yeah.
I understand. are there any key moments in Bismuth's like development that stand out for you with like the crew in terms of like pitches, designs, anything along those lines?
I remember the initial design for Bismuth, her eyes were black.
Oh yeah.
And then it was too suspicious.
Yeah,
it wasn't that she was evil. It wasn't to make her evil. It was just like, oh, this would be cool. It kind of, because it reflects her eyes, sort of like that inverted gem that
yeah,
she has. Like,
yeah.
But ultimately I think it was to make her a little more.
Yeah, the story was pretty set from the beginning in that she was gonna be sort of hyper aggressive and had been sort of put away because she was too gung-ho. Rebecca had that in mind when she was designing her. So I think that's part of why those black eyes were there. I'm trying to remember, were the dreadlocks always there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. I don't remember if they were always rainbow. I think she might've been more monochrome.
I remember she had a version where she had like really skinny legs. That was pretty cool.
That was the thing we were trying to do for a little bit. So we also tried to do that smoky quartz, like a bigger upper body and then tiny little legs just to mix up silhouettes.
Yeah. Someday we'll do that.
I love that.
But yeah, Bismuth isn't a bad guy. I want to clarify that.
She never was,
and we don't consider her as such. I think she had a different ideology, but
yes.
I think it's one that is very understandable, and I think half of the audience would agree. You know, do you save one person and kill millions, or do you save millions and kill one? I mean, I think depending on what you believe in, the answer is obvious. And so for Bismuth, the answer was obvious, but unfortunately it didn't align with Rose. And Rose, being kind of a gray character herself, did what she thought was best to protect her own interests. And that's how that all played out. But I don't think either party was explicitly wrong or right.
Yeah, and that's really the point of that episode, was sort of displaying and showing that to Steven.
Moral ambiguity.
Yes, yes. And then
your mom's not that great,
nope,
Steven.
Nope. And we keep returning to that moral ambiguity throughout the series.
Yeah, yeah. What was it like tackling that? I mean, it's not like, you know, you guys haven't tackled it before in the show, but like, I think that this was like a pretty big landmark in terms of just like the amount of ambiguity, I guess. What was it like tackling that for you guys?
It's ambiguous and not for Steven. Like, it's pretty clear to Steven, like, what's wrong and what's right in this situation. And he feels like what Bismuth wants to do is wrong. But he also doesn't want to fight her. He doesn't want... So I think that's where the moral ambiguity comes in.
Because he really likes her. He definitely doesn't want to do what she thinks he's going to do, which is bubble her away and not say anything to anyone, exactly like his mom did.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me of Jasper, too. This whole arc has sort of been about... Or, you know, the whole arc in season 3 was about Steven learning he can't help everyone. What else do you think is, like, similar between Jasper and Bismuth?
Size.
Size, yes. Muscles.
Yes.
Bludgeoning weapons.
Okay. I love Bismuth's, like, the fact that she has a forge. For some reason, I can't remember the word for that.
Yeah, it's a Bismuth forge.
Yep.
Oh, blacksmith.
Oh, you like anvil, blacksmith.
Anvil, yeah. Hammer, yeah. Blacksmith.
I think they're more different than they are similar. You know, I think Bismuth is really blue collar. She's just a construction worker. Jaster is kind of, you know, she's a glorious warrior, super respected. Bismuth was like literally in the dirt making things for gems. And so she found out it didn't have to be that way and she rebelled. And Jasper wants it to be that way forever. She likes the order. She wants everything to be exactly as it is. And Bismuth wants anarchy.
Because she's cool.
She is cool.
Don't incite anarchy, Joe.
Rule of cool, Kat. Rule of cool. If it's cool, it's cool.
It stays. Yes. All right, guys. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to me again.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
The Steven Universe podcast is produced by Charles Abadje, Stacey Pera, and Conrad Montgomery. Special thanks to Rob Sorcher, Cartoon Network Studios, and the Crooniverse. Subscribe to the Steven Universe podcast now at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please leave us a 5-star rating and review while you're there. I'm Mackenzie Atwood, and I will see you next Thursday.